This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby. And we have last week's guest here again because we really just scratched the surface with the subject we were discussing, which really is the value of art today and how do we evaluate that and how do we criticize that and what's the role of the reviewer, what's the role of the artist, what's the role of the audience. And I think at the end of that discussion, we were talking about that it's a kind of triumvirate of intelligences that come together to make for the art experience. There's the what the artist is doing in his studio and the integrity of that act, as opposed to maybe he just wants to have an art show with his name on it, or maybe he's trying to pursue some kind of uncovering of truth through his work. There's the audience bringing an open mind and an innocence to the work to want to get the gift that the artist is giving, is presenting, without coming to the work with this idea of already how they feel about that kind of thing. And then there's a role for teachers, reviewers, critical analysis that helps this process take place. And traditionally that's been the art magazines, the writers in the newspapers, the curators even that
and
present
even the brokers,
information.
Even the art brokers have a role. Even the people who promote the art have a role.
Did I say your name? I said we're here with the president last week, and did
no,
I say John
no.
Stimson? It's John Stimson.
Hello. I'm still me. Continuing on that discussion, I think that there's little reason for despair in the postmodern art world because we're still talking, this is my particular stump, my particular viewpoint, we're still talking about an environment. It is simply a matter of defining what is our environment. For many people, nature is still their environment. Whether they're talking about being actually out in the woods or enjoying the weather of all kinds, the environment that we live in is always connected with artwork. Now, in terms of someone like Agnes Martin, her environment was entirely herself's self. That is to say, it was entirely at the dismissal of what we call the outside world, but that was in fact her environment, was her internal reality. So we can always come back to that. Our definition, our perception of our environment, we, that is to say, we people within a culture have always a perception of and a relation to our environment. It's simply a matter of defining and agreeing what our environment is.
Picasso.
Well, it's as polarized, I think, today as the red states and the blue states, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. That is true. Go ahead, Picasso.
Picasso talked about nature and said that the most even, and this was, of course, at a time before the abstract art way, you know, the abstract expressionist, but it was still in the realm of modern art and people were moving towards abstraction. He said, in his opinion, even the most abstract paintings were still directly related to nature and the laws of nature, and that you absolutely couldn't get away from nature.
Certainly Jim Wilde would agree with
as
that.
As an artist.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I've always disliked the separation in terms of definition of nature. People who call nature the woods and plants
right.
and things like that, and human nature or the laws of mechanics or any of these other things as not being nature. I think it's all nature. It's all
yep.
natural laws of various sorts interacting with one another, and there can be much overlapping of art approaches
yeah.
that are...
It's true, but there's an interesting, you know, change in one's set of values and contexts and things. I think of you know, the sort of perhaps extreme example, but a very common one of someone who spends most of his or her time watching television. And now they're looking at something that can, in a broad sense, be considered art. It's the creative expression of people who have created stuff. The ads are creative in their context, and the soap operas are creative in their context.
And it's an environment.
And it's a total, almost total environment. Of course, a totally passive one, but it is a huge conceptual environment. But it's so excruciatingly limited in comparison to an environment of interacting with real people or interacting with trees and frogs. The people who are doing this, I mean, I think, bless her heart, to some extent, of my dearly departed mom, who spent an amazing amount of time with what she called her shows. And they were her soap operas, and she cared about those fake people and their fake relationships and the fake things that were happening in their lives. And she cared about them after a while kind of inordinately. And she hadn't forgotten that she was a human being, and she still was 100% there, and she was a very intelligent, discriminating person. But she could soak this stuff up and lapse into a kind of soporific, you know, state where her standards went down and down and down and down until, you know, Mary and I dragged her out, or my sister dragged her out, and we just talking to her for 10 minutes would shatter that bubble. But if no one did it, you know, there was a world in which she had a full set of aesthetics that just happened to be a different set from when she was dealing with reality. But in a sense, the TV is part of reality, and those shows are part of the expression of the laws of nature. And there's just there's a different context. Maybe it's nothing more than context in an extreme example.
The appeal of something like television space is its pre-digested understandability. In other words, it's comprehensible because it is literally made to exacting standards to be immediately recognizable, to be immediately assimilatable, so that it will not flag in your attention. It's entirely attention-grabbing, whereas something like a real human relationship or a relationship with nature can sometimes be distracting or very baffling, and it takes work to find your way around. It takes work to interact with people in such a way that it is not only meaningful but also surprising and can cause, God forbid, growth in a person.
Well, and maybe that's part of what we are kind of looking for in an artwork.
Exactly.
Is that it should be at least capable of popping some of those bubbles and, you know, stimulating a certain amount of work. I can remember, we didn't have a TV when I was growing up, and when we got one, you know, in my teenage years, I can remember just being appalled by most of it. I loved a few programs, and the rest of it I couldn't stand, and being a teenager, I was extremely judgmental about it. But after a while, I can remember a few times when I was sick and I watched TV all day long, and I thought, God, this is awful. But after a few days, I began to find ways of liking it. And I swear it was damaging my values. It was
seductive.
Damaging my lowering my standards. Yeah.
So I would like to say, and on the other hand, and I'm not a TV addict at all, and as a child we had a television, but I was not the one in the family who watched TV much at all. However, I can see, you know, we can't make it a black and white issue, a bad or good issue, because a bookworm, someone who never watches TV but is always buried in a book, can be just as detached from real life as a TV watcher. And also, what I find useful about, because I, for a long time, I didn't even have television as an adult. I didn't subscribe to it. I didn't have cable. And now I have it. And I find that at certain times, it's useful to spark some interest in something that I would not come across in ordinary life.
Yeah.
And you know, you can like stumble upon some program about some other culture or about some kind of people who are completely different from the people who live in your own town, who can then lead you, take your curiosity into a direction that then becomes a very real part of your life.
Yeah,
so there is a use for it.
I certainly wasn't putting down television. What I was really commenting on was the influence of an environment that is as limited as television.
Yes.
Because
yeah,
for all of its diversity and for all of the HBO dramas and things that I, you know, wait eagerly to see the next episode of, and prepositions on the ends of put prepositions on the ends of sentences. I can't even say the right thing the right way. It creates a context that's incredibly confined. I mean, imagine instead of a 1 hour special on, you know, the Mundugumoor or something, spending 15 actual minutes with Margaret Mead. There's, you know, no comparison. The stuff in the special on some interesting topic is just like 6 points that have been spread, you know, smoothly over an entire hour, and they're made over and over again, and, you know, with minor variations and things. Yes, it's good. It's better than not to have learned any of those things. It's better than not to have seen any of those things. But there's still it's a domain in which discrimination is minimalized and insight is subverted. And, you know, there's very little to offer compared to actually doing something. I mean, just going for a walk is really ultimately probably more stimulating and surprising than, you know, a comparable amount of time watching television. But like I said, I'm not saying television is bad. I'm saying that what we expose ourselves to kind of determines what we expect to get from it. And if we never look at anything new, we never get anything new. And if we spend all of our time in the living room watching television, we have a much smaller range of experience than if we go to the library and see actual people walking around, even if we don't talk to them. Well, you know, it's a whole
Because there's three aspects of, you know, it's like when you're just sitting in front of the television all day long, all you're doing is gathering images. Taking them in, gathering images, they're watching, you know, some of them you remember, some of them are just gone like 5 minutes later. And there's no opportunity to speak, give your expression, ask your questions to somebody, have your own creativity creating some impressions based on that. And
there are no demands at all.
Yeah, there's no demands whatsoever. And I think that's even more crucial, an even more crucial part of this whole topic.
Well, there's two things that come up. I would like to get back to the environment issue.
Right, yeah.
And off the television issue, although I have to have the last word. it's not the last. It's a thought that came up. I don't think people go to the television necessarily for this interaction that you would get taking the walk or having the intellectual discussion. But people are soothed by the thing. And I think it's a little bit like bedtime stories. And bedtime stories are mythic stories, classic tales, that there's a sense of like, there's the rising action, and there's a culmination, there's the heroes, and there's the resolution. And there's something that is, that by putting through mythic stories, there's something that's healed within, and certain patterns are recognized, and the society is able to hold together. There's some value in it. And no matter how like despicable we might feel about the soap operas and stuff, they're all built out of these mythic stories. So when we watch Bonanza or we watch some CSI, some whatever on today, they're all built on these same patterns, which I think there's something that's gained and why they're so attractive to just check out and have a bedtime story. before you get up and deal with the world again the next day. So that's
right.
The last bottom line here. Nobody can have any other opinion. I'd like to go back to the environment issue, because with art,
ties in.
It's so a part of it. Because I know that I've sat in some place like Long Beach in Los Angeles, which was a kind of bedroom community, no culture when I was young. Today it's become kind of an arty place, but when I was young, I had no culture around me, and all the people around me had no culture. So that when I discovered San Francisco and went off to Berkeley in San Francisco, where there was culture, and everybody looked down their noses at the LA people, it was another environment. I remember going off there and saying, I'm not going to become one of those. And when I went there, I became one of those. Hmm. It's like birds of a feather kind of flock together. I was attracted to that place because there was something inside me that was attracted to that environment. And even though I said I wasn't going to just become a slave to the way they saw things, I sort of, without help, couldn't help sort of becoming, seeing things the way people in that environment saw things. And so when artists are attracted to places like New York, it's because there's a dynamic going on there that we can guess at from not being in New York, but you can never really know what that is without being there. And it has its effect on you, for better or for worse. We like to pretend out here in Iowa that we know what's going on there. We can make all these judgments about it. I actually like being here. I like this environment because you can sort of see, you can have a stepped back view of what's going on globally with culture, and having been raised in the big city and having gone to the university and all this in the West Coast, and knowing and having this cross-pollinization taking place here of people from the East Coast and the West Coast and various levels and degrees of education, various outsiders, and all this all put together in the context of the Midwest practical, you know, show me kind of right in front of my face kind of attitude. All of this makes for a nice mix where I think we're in a position to be able to do something good in this environment.
It's no wonder that Iowa City, for instance, is considered a mecca of writers and poets, because it is central to an environment that is not unduly influenced by any other environment. And I like Iowa City because it is a small urban setting, which means that it has not so much of a tendency to be out and out hick, I would say. Fairfield is a funny combination. It's a little too big for its britches sometimes, I will say, because per capita we have a little too much going on. I like myself the environment of a small town. I like the proximity to nature and just the right amount of social interaction, so that there is not a complete loss of that. But Fairfield has a fascinating problem. I would say it's an embarrassment of riches culturally, such that there is so much going on, and there's so much ego. There is so much ego in Fairfield within the individual people, and Fairfield itself has an ego that is sometimes in danger of losing its own perspective. And that's something that is a delightful problem, because it at least is aware of itself. The danger is when a place becomes unaware of itself. So Fairfield has riches, and it certainly has awareness. That is almost by definition what Fairfield is about. There is a clutter of awareness. There is a surplus of awareness. People run away from Fairfield because there's too much awareness. What is necessary is a kind of balance and integrity, I think, that could take all of that awareness and funnel it into real spiritual growth, which involves participation, honesty, activity, and deep thinking, dialogue, And that is an environment that I would hope to live in. That's something that I've strived to create for myself by being a part of the Fairfield community.
I think what's happening in Fairfield now is this, like we were talking about earlier, in any human interactions, it's very complicated, can be a bit messy, sticky, you know.
Yeah.
Clashes take place. But what I've seen in the decades that I've lived in Fairfield is that the very struggle itself to find an identity is getting more and more interesting as time goes on. Even though, like you said, there are these kind of ego clashes and, you know, sometimes inflated opinion about what we have here. At the same time, that hope of creating something really fantastic and unique and, you know, the most interesting place in the whole Midwest and all that, there, that keeps people going in this dialogue and in this struggle to find out what exactly it is we want to create. Obviously, there are a lot of different opinions about the direction that, you know, the end result of what we want it to be. But I think the process itself right now is a healthy one that's going on, and it may go through many changes, and it will go through many changes.
But to me, a key is to take the truths that we are after and remove them from identifying them as our truths, as Fairfield's truths, as the Midwest truths or America's truths or anything. But if we, as seekers of truth and artists or whatever, dislocate that identity of truth belonging to someone or belonging in a place, but simply and rather humbly seeking after truth that is universal and that belongs to everybody. It is certainly not an elite possession. It is a very democratic possession. Truth is truth, which means that it really ultimately belongs to everybody. That if we go ahead with our awareness, our ego, and our search for the truth, but not claim it as our own, but claim it as the treasure that belongs to every individual by birthright, then we can be champions of something that is much bigger than Fairfield, much bigger than ourselves. And it can give a sense of importance along with a sense of balance and humility.
Well, I have said for some time, even though I like encourage everyone, the other thing that I've been saying at the same time, and this is that balancing thing, is that what the artists need to do rather than to promote, than to put a lot of energy into self-promotion and to getting their work out there and stuff, is they need to go back in the studio and take it one degree deeper, go further, increase
Absolutely.
Their, improve their craftsmanship, improve their angle, their motivation, try to question deeper. If they only go a little bit further, that'll take it a long ways towards Fairfield actually being a town where really great art is accomplished. But if we just want to touch in and then zoom out to promote and to become famous and to become an artist and all of these things, or we just hype Fairfield, that's what I'm saying. I don't Yep. like people just hyping Fairfield as this special place. I think that it has to be special. I'm agreeing with you. Yep. I think it has to be special based on there being some substance that
Exactly.
people can't ignore. So we're doing ourselves a disservice if we go out and just try to promote ourselves as this special place, when what we really ought to be doing is going back to the drawing board and going further and deeper and locating truth in our art.
As much as we are connected to, I would say, a particular stream of spiritual thought, I mean, there is no, even even people who are not directly connected with the TM movement are undoubtedly influenced by the TM movement, and it is a large force in everyone's life here. But to me, the real nature of spirituality is as soon as you step out of a system or a stream of influence and really take it to the individual level and say, this is the realm of spirituality is inside, not outside. I mean, it is important to keep balance by looking outside, but the realm of spirituality has nothing to do with traveling to the dome or talking with people in the movement or about the movement, trashing the movement, whatever. But it starts when that dialogue stops. It starts when you sit down and you're alone and there you are with yourself. So to me, the two very important things for artists to look, the direction for artists to look in is, this is where it starts. Here I am sitting here. Imagine that there isn't anyone else in the world. I'm doing this entirely for myself. But then also, taking whatever medium you're working in and really exercising the full potential of that medium, whether it's painting, sculpture, television, music, give the medium its full due also.
All right. I think that I just want to say that it's a matter of the artist finding their role, yeah, and their calling as medicine men and as shamanic characters, not just decorators, yeah, and that they don't. How much time have we got?
25 seconds.
It's not a matter of. I think the artist should sit there in this, what you've just described, mm-hmm, and he wants to develop his skill with the medium as much as he possibly can so he can speak fluently from exactly that place. Yeah. And then he should feel like there's no more need for another artwork in this world. Given that, what would I say and do, and how can I express myself? And why should I?
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.